Blog Talk Radio.
Let me tell you about something new. A new show called G's Power.
G's Power.
Real talk for real saints.
Are you ready?
And it's for real.
Welcome to G's Power Hour, live every weekday at 11:30 a.m. on Never Had It So Good Entertainment Network. Your host, G, will bring you informative and entertaining guests and a variety of topics in a way that you can absorb and enjoy. Listen in weekdays and call in at 516-387-1944. We love interaction. All shows can be downloaded if you miss one or found on iTunes the next day. G's Power Hour is powered by Never Had It So Good Sports Media Network.
G's Power Hour.
Yeah.
Good morning, brothers and sisters, kings and queens, angels and saints, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. Really appreciate your time today. It is hump day. Yes, first Wednesday of the month. We are happy that you are with us. And we have our special guest that we always love to have because we just can't get enough of conversation. Princess Cooper, good morning. How are you? Uh-oh. Princess, you abandoned me. Anyway. All right, so Princess is not here yet, but we want you to chime in on the conversation, whatever you want to talk about today. The number is 516-387-1944. That is 516-387-1944. What I would like to talk about is, starting today, is I just want everybody to be careful. It's vacation season. You know, some of us vacation at a time of the year and stuff like that. But we know when the kids get out of school and stuff like that, we want to take them on family vacations, or this is just the kind of a easier time of year with the, you know, the nice sunny weather that we plan vacations. Problem is sometimes we get a little bit too careless. And even if we aren't careless, we just can't be too careful. And what I'm talking about is, there, you know, I watch Good Morning America a lot, and but it's kind of all over the internet where this couple, and there've been it's been more than one case, but in the Dominican Republic, there have been several cases lately where tourists from the United States and other places have gone over there and have gotten either sick or gotten beaten up or killed. So, I mean, there's even, I guess, a big travel advisory out there that came out in April. There have been some violent crimes there, armed robbery, homicide, and sexual assault. Now, my mom went to the Dominican Republic years ago. She talked about how she had a good time over there and everything like that. I have a cousin. I called him first thing this morning because he's going with a number of people over to a wedding over there. But there have been just various issues with people traveling over there. The story that I saw this morning was about a couple vacationing, and the woman got a drink from the mini bar. She mixed it with a soda, and then she ended up having some respiratory problems and dying. There's another story, and I'm going to post this one. It was updated today. I'm going to post it on G's Power Hour Facebook page about a couple that were found dead in their hotel room. Edward Nathaniel Holmes, 63, and Cynthia Ann Day, 49, found dead. May 30th, hotel room at the Playa Nueva Romana Resort, and I may be getting that name wrong, in San Pedro de Macorís. They said they were supposed to depart on the same day, and they were discovered dead after they missed their scheduled checkout time. You all, please, just be very careful. Can't be too careful. Check ahead of time the travel advisories. I mean, I know it just seems like work, and you want to kind of just get up and go or just make these plans and just bask in the excitement of getting away and going to someplace, you know, different, or even someplace that you've been before that you enjoyed and you want to go back. But check the travel advisories. Check anything in terms of any vaccinations you might need. Check any kind of political upheaval that may be going on in these other places, if you're going outside of the country, hopefully you kept up with enough politics to know what the political upheaval that may or may not be going on here. So, you know, that should be a given. But, you know, you're going to someplace new, just be prepared more than just a good set of luggage. And also, don't forget to make sure that you have your prescription medication and how you're supposed to handle your prescription medication while you're away. And I say prescription medication because if you're taking supplements, I'm sure you can miss a few days without vitamins and supplements. The prescription medication is a different story. But I just really want everybody to be careful. My cousin, who I'm very close to, I'm going to worry about him probably until he gets back. Okay, but, you know, and that's just me. But I've already talked to him, so, you know, he's a grown man and probably a lot more careful than I am. But I just want he and his family to be safe, and I want them all to have a good time while they're over there. But you can't have a good time if someone ends up getting hurt or killed. That's just bottom line. Princess Cooper, are you with me? Oh, dear. I wonder what happened to her. This is her day to be with me. Oh, well, just got to keep going. Another story I came across, and I need to find it. Here we go. I know ladies are big into Sephora. I saw a story that they are closing for an hour for diversity training. They closed all of its stores in the U.S. for about an hour today to host inclusion workshops for its 16,000 employees. They said a month after SZA said she had security called on her while she was shopping at a store in California. I'll share this story as well. They said that the training had been in development for months before this happened. And it says incident reinforces while belonging and inclusion is more important than ever. This is off of the AP. It says in addition to the store's closing, the company said it would close its distribution centers and corporate office for the workshops to discuss what it means to belong in the context of gender identity, race and ethnicity, age, abilities, and more. As they say, the stores will open to customers following the training. So if you happen to be, you know, in a mall or in an area where there's a Sephora store and they are closed, you know, hang out. They'll, you know, be back open probably in about an hour. They had, apparently, according to this story, the employees who, in at the store in Manhattan, for example, were wearing black T-shirts with Sephora's new tagline, "We belong to something beautiful." Helping themselves to cut coffee and to listen to a speaker, but they aren't commenting publicly about the session. But, you know, I know everything, you know, doesn't happen or change overnight, but we got to applaud Sephora for taking the initiative and going forward and holding the diversity training. And I'm hoping that they'll devote more than just this 1 hour, but, you know, everything has to start somewhere. So.
Hello, Gretchen.
Hey.
I sent you, technology is a wonderful thing. I sent you two different messages to say, hey, first 10 minutes on you, I'll see you in 10 minutes. Did I said I'll see you in 10 minutes.
I didn't get them. Okay, but hold on. I got to check the phone that I'm on. But I didn't see that before. But anyway, good morning. How are you, Princess Cooper?
I'm doing good. What happened with Sephora that they are... What was the incident?
Okay, well, of course, and like I said, I didn't even really know about the incident until I was reading that they were having the diversity training. They said SZA, I guess that's S-Z-A, apparently had some sort of incident last month. They said she had security called on her while she was shopping at a store in California. So, but they said they've been planning this training before that experience. But to me,
if you're planning,
you know, like I said, you got to kind of start somewhere. It you know, it's a shame that you have to have certain incidents that trigger it. But, you know, my thinking is if you were planning this long before this, then an hour's worth, it should have been more than an hour's worth of training that was planned.
I still don't know what the complaint was. Was the complaint, was this young lady approached because she was African American or Puerto Rican or because
she
was transgender?
I just saw this. So I'm going to go ahead and take a deeper look into that. So,
let me just comment a little bit and say. Gretchen, it's 2019. If we as a people, and I'm talking about everywhere from 5 years old to 105, we have seen enough through the internet and been exposed to enough diverse things. Now, we may not believe in all of these diverse things. I still have a problem with some of them, but I am accepting of them. I am accepting, and what has happened is this whole aura of negative publicity, starting with the leader of the free world, and the negative and the aggression against people you don't like, and now you. So if we don't like them, we can bully them on the internet with no name. We can just go and confront them because we can Google their address. But what happened to just human decency or everyone having a moral compass or a decency compass? But to say, okay, now we need diversity training, and I don't want to get any diversity trainer out of a job, but it's 2019. Mm-hmm. We should have a compass as a whole, as Americans, to say, that's not my belief, but it's okay to be different and to exist as different people, right?
Well, I'll tell you what happened to it. I can tell you exactly, well, in my opinion.
Please tell me.
Exactly what happened to it. It happened when you had these kids come along and said, I ain't making my child go to church like my parents used to make me go to church all every Sunday. I'm not doing that. I'm going to let my child, you know, let my child, they forget these are children. I'm going to let my child make their own decisions. And so we have a lot of people out there. And on top of that, they decided that the training, the home training that they had weren't good enough for themselves either. I'm just going to do what I want to do. I'm just going to be me and everybody else be, you know what, you know, so we have, you know, what they, I guess they have termed the me society, the me generation or whatever, and we got a little bit too much of it. We went overboard. Mm-hmm. Okay. There's a huge lack of accountability for the sake of, for the sake of freedom and privacy, okay, you know, why are you in my business? See, when we were growing up, the neighbors were in your business, you know. The community was in your business. And because they were in your business, you had to, as my mom used to say in the old terms, straighten up and fly right. You had to, you know, act a certain way because you were going to get called on it. Now, if someone calls you on it, then you're in, you know, I'm saying you in general, people are, you know, ending up saying, you know, this person is harassing me, you know. So we've gone to, the pendulum has swung way too far over to the other side where we don't want people holding us accountable. We don't want people calling us on our dirt.
Because the leader of the free world is not accountable for his dirt. So there's a new America.
The reason he isn't, Princess, the reason he isn't is because you have people that voted him in that have said, yes, we got somebody in there that can get away with anything, and we want to be just like him. And so we're going to put him in there because we know that he's not going to call, he's not going to, be called on his dirt, and we don't have to either. Because if you notice, there were a lot of, after he got elected, there were a lot of, an increase in hate crimes because people thought they could get away with it, So my thing is that, we're not sending our kids to church. We're putting them in time out. We're putting computers – okay, I'm going on my diatribe. I'm sorry. But we're putting computers in their bedrooms, which I don't agree with. You don't – the bedroom is where you go to bed. That you go there to wind down and take your behind the bed, child, okay? You put a computer in a room that's used generally by everybody else where you can keep it quiet. Put it in a library or an office or something where – that person can be monitored for what they're looking at on the computer. I mean, because when we send kids to their room, you used to say, go to your room, and there wasn't anything in the room other than the bed.
Well, I grew up with the TV in my room, but we also send them to bed. I probably by the time I was in second grade or seventh grade or third grade. But when you went to the room, you went to go to sleep, and you didn't get to close your door. Your door was open and everything off.
Right.
But also you send kids to their room now, and even if they don't have a TV or a computer in their room, if you allow them to have a phone at 10 or 11 and you don't take it from them at night because they don't need a cell phone when they're with you. So when kids come in with their cell phones at 10, 11, 12, 13, supposedly you gave them to them so that you can be able to get in contact with them. All electronics in this basket. You can get it in the morning when you get ready to leave. But a lot of children now get into a lot of promiscuous and other things at 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15 because the internet is on their phone. Google is on their phone. I happen to be, though, Gretchen, one of those children. My mother was very heavily involved in church, but she didn't make us go. Now, my grandmother used to require if we were with her to go, but she didn't. If you don't want to go, you don't have to. I would like for you to, but you don't have to. I want you to discover God for yourself. Now, once I got to college, I went every Tuesday and Thursday because Spelman required you to be in chapel. That was your class at 11 o'clock on Tuesdays and Thursdays. And then that was just your freshman year. Going into the rest of your years, it was voluntary, but I discovered something, so I continued to go. But there was, even though you didn't go, you had to worship. At some point, you had, there was God all over our house, and you had to respect and give scriptures and talk about it and understanding what you're talking about. But I do agree in today's time, there needs to be some semblance of religion or God in your life or faith and whatever. And if that generation that you're talking about didn't go to church, there was no foundation set. But I watched my mother serve in church, and there were times when she wanted us to go. But there was a time where she, and I'm talking about 10, 11, 12, 13, she didn't make us go. And that may have a lot to do with the fact that my father didn't like going. So she went and served, and, he stayed home, and we were there. So, but luckily that worked out for us. I do agree with you, though. I agree with you and kind of disagree with my mom. I think as children up until 16, 17, we should all be in church on Sunday. I really do.
We should
be in church. Even if you're reading something else, the fact that you're there and you may hear the word of God sparingly or in children's church, but you should hear the word of God and what that means in your life.
And I have another issue. Well, goodness gracious, I've got issues. But, the thing about it is, about the child, you've got to be grown enough to form the child. And I'm going to tell you something that my mom told me that I understand. I didn't like it when she said it, and I didn't agree with it at the time. But I understand it now. And that is, my mom used to say, I'm your mama. I'm not your friend. Now, she was. She was my friend, but she was my mama. She was my mom. And there was no, and she made it clear. So there was no mistaking that she was my mom. She was the authority figure in my life. We have parents out there that are so, now my parents kept up on stuff just so they would know what was going on with me and could converse with me about stuff or not be totally ignorant. Or they would ask me questions, you know, they would have conversations with me to know what was going on and what was going on in the world that I was out in when I wasn't home with them. You know, but you have parents now that are trying to get into the stuff that the kids are into because they're trying to be buddy-buddy. And they're not trying
to be.
Well,
I don't know if they're trying to be buddy-buddy, but the parents today don't want to be parents. They still want to party and club and the internet and, you know, this is a faster lane.
But my parents went out. I mean, they went to every year the black and white ball or whatever they, you know, I mean, you know, whatever they went to. They did go out. I had, you know, babysitters from time to time or whatever. They had adult time and they went out, but they weren't partying with me per se. Unless
you
was in the house and it was some cousins and stuff and we were all
okay,
you know, hanging out.
Let's take Facebook then. Let's take Facebook. My children are on Facebook.
Uh-huh.
You know, they're on Twitter. They're on Instagram. Yeah. Now, I choose not to be connected. Now, I'll go out and see what's there. But I choose not to be connected. You know, I'm grown. They're my children. There's part of me that doesn't feel that I want them to comment on stuff that I'm posting amongst other adults. You're not, to me, it's a different level of adult. You should be interacting with your level of adults on Facebook, and I'll interact with my level of adult. We allow children now to be entertained by, or we are entertained by the same thing that they are. And that is the internet and Twitter and Facebook and Instagram and, you know, and the kids now say Facebook is for older people. They're just on Instagram or Snapchat or some of the other ones. But the internet has leveled the playing field amongst people. So, you know, my 12-year-old grandson through Reverend Robinson has a Facebook. I don't know. What for? The internet has leveled it. The internet has leveled your exposure to stuff. It used to be, okay, oh, so-and-so has a magazine up under his bed or whatever. That was a travesty. That was a big deal.
Yeah.
You can look at that all day long now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And twice on Sundays.
Well, the thing is, you really have to make a concerted effort, and I think that's where everybody is like, oh, I got to work at this. Yeah, you got to work at this. You've got to make a concerted effort to not, and in some cases, it's not a big effort, but you've got to make an effort not to let certain things impact your life. Like you were talking about Facebook. Now, Facebook impacts my life at a whole different level than it does yours, and you and I both know that, right? You know, because I'll tell you now, unless it's something dealing with the show or my businesses or whatever, you're going to be hard-pressed to find me hanging out on Facebook for any long period of time. Even when I have downtime, Facebook is not my go-to. It just isn't. So you're going to have to probably call me on the cell phone and say, I sent you something on Facebook. That's probably how you're going to get me to go on my off time, because I've got life to, as far as I'm concerned, I got life to live, and it ain't all about Facebook for me. You know?
Well, let's
but there
look
are
at,
some people, huh?
I was going to say, let's look at the influencer, though, and meet. Media, social or TV, but media is an influencer. You know,
yes, it is.
because I am into social media and I develop websites and that sort of thing, I watch commercials. And one of my favorite things is to have HGTV on all day. So, you know, whether it's Hawaiian Life or Fine, you know, Life is a Beach, or, you know, they're looking for homes or house hunters. It is okay now. And accepting it, I see more on cereal commercials, same sex, you know, couples or marriage, I'm not for sure, you know, on every commercial now, and on every TV show. As a matter of fact, there, you know, a lot of TV shows have hosts that I really love, you know, and I wish I didn't know their sex life, you know, or what their preference is, because on CNN, I love me some Don Lemon, you know, HGTV, my lottery, whatever, my lottery ticket.
Lottery Dream Home, yeah.
Yeah, you know, love that show. But
love the show.
Now, that's not how we were raised, and that's not of God as far as my teachings in church.
Yeah.
That is not of God. But,
right.
You know, from President Obama to Michelle Obama, that was one of their campaign strategies, and that was one of the things that they really promoted and wanted to equal level the playing field in that particular arena, you know? So, but from where how we were raised and wearing ponytails and those little ball attachments to our hair and the little clip-on ones and every other color, and you lost some, and then mom went out and got another bag of them. We've gone from that to, you know, children getting their hair blowouts and looking like grown folks at 6, 7, 8, 9.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when Easter came, we were getting that hair. We were in somebody's kitchen with that comb on the stove, weren't we? That's where we were.
And I
look at how life has progressed.
Comb on the stove, real quick.
Did you?
I got tired of getting my ears burned. Yeah, and I had very thick hair, so I had to get that stuff pained really, really early. But yeah,
I just said I had long thick hair, but yeah. So just look at our lives, and if our parents were living, let's say if our moms were living. What a time they would have and say, oh, look at that. Oh, look at that. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Gretchen, did you see that?
Well, I remember when I graduated college and I decided to – I went to South Florida and decided to stay in Tampa afterwards because I was considering, you know, extending my school and other things. So I got an apartment, and I remember it was my first apartment. My mom came over. And she looked around and everything, because I happened to get an apartment actually where it was kind of one of those coveted type of apartments that everybody wanted to move into, and people used to have parties at the clubhouse every now and then if they knew somebody that, you know, to get them into the clubhouse. So I got a nice apartment. It was upstairs. It was on a river. On the riverbanks. So I had a nice view. You could see the ducks climbing up and everything. Just a little one-bedroom apartment, probably about maybe 600 square feet or something. But my mom came and she looked and everything. She looked around and she's like, girl, if I could have gotten an apartment like this when I was coming up, I would have never gotten married. She was saying, you know, the opportunity. She was kidding, but, you know, the thing about it in terms of the opportunities for her, you know, she got married. She was 19. It was 1944. It was toward the end of World War II. Just different scenario. And she was talking about how just she also told me when I was planning my wedding, she's like, we didn't have a wedding. She said, there was no such thing for black folks for a wedding when I was growing up. When, you know, she's like, she said, the day that we got married, she said, I had made a little yellow dress that she made. She and Dad met up at the courthouse. She said, they got married. She went shopping for dinner for that evening, and he went back to work, you know. So, yeah, you know, in terms of what we have now, the opportunities, you know, because for me, it was just a given. I was going to graduate college, I was going to get a job, and I was going to get my own place. That you know, that was you worked. That was the working toward that thing. So it was never any question for me, and I guess I don't know where my mindset was or should have been, but that was what I was supposed to do. And you know, it's just the fact. So there's a lot of stuff I guess I took for granted. In my view, coming out of college or at that age, versus what was available to our parents, you know, at that time.
So. Well, you know, my first job coming out of college, I rolled right into a management job with IVs that turned into Dillard's. But my first job, I was making more than my mom did after 38 years of teaching.
Mm-hmm.
My first job at 20. Oh, yeah. 23.
Mm-hmm.
And for her to have me at 23 making $77,000, oh, she was like, okay, help yourself, you know, save your money, you know, understand. But, you know, that generation, your mom's generation and my mom's generation was, you know, you grow up and you be a good girl and then you get married and you are submissive to your husband. He is the king of the household and the leader of your family. Now, I still believe that in the household, a man needs to take charge and lead. And, you know, and then your talents then need to fill in the gaps. If he's not good at financing, then you are. If you're not good at this, then he is. I think your talents then, you know, fill in the gaps. I don't think your talents take over the household, but then you become a team. But they were raised to get married, and 19
mm-hmm.
was really okay an age.
Mm-hmm.
When I came up,
yeah.
To get married, I'm 19. I think I married at 24, 25. I was, you know, and that was okay. And I remember getting a divorce and being in church and, you know, for myself at that time, a wonderful church. And the deacon was like, we got to find you, you know, somebody. No, no, no. I don't
mm-hmm.
need that to legitimize me. It's okay.
Yeah.
I'm legitimate in this single life. And so, you know, and I hear words like, okay, a man chooses a woman. Well, we have to choose them back, don't we?
Yeah, we sure do.
You know, I know we're way off of the original topic of diversity.
We are.
But this world has really evolved into what we're now dealing with. And I don't think the morality has kept up with the technology.
No. It hasn't. And that brings me back to the other thing that I was going to say. One of my pet peeves is, and I know I'm going to make some folks mad, but I don't really care. And
mm-hmm.
that is, our churches aren't keeping up. I look at the role that our churches played. Yeah, I'm sorry, I got to say it. I look at the role our churches played, like during the civil rights movement, you know,
mm-hmm.
and people speaking out. One of the things that got me is I don't know how we got a president in there that's been married, that's on his third marriage,
mm-hmm.
and was supported by evangelists.
Mm-hmm.
How does that
evangelicals,
happen?
Evangelicals have come so far as to say that he was chosen by God to lead this nation. No, he wasn't.
No,
he wasn't.
No.
And we can't have one set of standards of moral compass for President Obama and another set for that nut. No,
right.
But go ahead.
Now, yeah, but that is my problem, is that and I don't know if it's because the media doesn't cover it when these people speak out or that they're just not speaking out. In my opinion, they're not speaking out. They're not coalescing, you know, and speaking out loudly enough on certain issues. And to me, part of the reason is that they're so caught up in their own messes, because a lot of them have messy lives, and I hate to say it, a lot of them have messy lives. We have a lot of so-called preachers that haven't been properly trained in the word and or haven't been divinely guided into preaching, okay? Because you have to have, in my opinion, You have to be into the Word. You have to be into the Bible or whatever your faith is. You have to have total knowledge of it and not just a few scriptures. You have to have total knowledge of it, number one, and or number two, and I think you need both. But you have to have had some sort of divine intervention in your life, into it. You have to have been called. And we have a lot of people out there that are into it and haven't been called. And then we have
okay,
a lot of people.
There you go. Stop right there, Gretchen. There are a lot of people. There are a lot of people. You know, there are a lot of ministers and bishops and reverends and people that call themselves prophetess and prophet. And okay, we can go on and on about that. Who were not really called. And of course, my house phone is going to ring, so I'm going to have to cut this off.
I understand.
Yeah. So there are a lot of people. And that is so noticeable. There are a lot of people in the pulpit. And that's a whole nother show, Gretchen. But I do want to stop right there and make note of it, that I would say 90% of those who are in the pulpit are not adhering to what they're preaching.
Exactly. So, 90%, so you understand what I'm saying. You understand exactly what I'm saying.
They're in that pulpit delivering a message, and sometimes you think that they are ordained by God, and that message is meant for you. But when you pull back, take off the robe, and look at their lives and their walk, they need intervention.
Yes, they do. They do. You know, a lot of us get pulled into stuff because, you know, that person is charismatic, or what they're doing in terms of how they conduct their service or whatever is appealing and charismatic, and it's fun. But sometimes we need a little bit more than fun, okay? sometimes we need a good scolding and a good talking to, and we have to be, like I said, put in our place. We have to be made or held accountable. And we also have to, you know, and that's part of what, what that's about. But like I said, you have people, for example, that aren't going to say there's something wrong with divorce.
Mm-hmm.
Or you're going to have people that aren't going to say, because they've been divorced. Or you're going to have people that aren't going to say there's something wrong with adultery and fornication, because they have been adulterers and fornicators. Now, this is the thing. If you're going, like they said, people in glass houses shouldn't throw stones. You know, this is the thing. You have to balance. First of all, us as a congregation for these ministers, the legitimate ministers, have to understand that these are people and they are fallible. So you have to balance that out with also having the respect for what they've gone through in order to bring God's message to you, okay? Because a lot of times we close ourselves off because that person is flawed and has done something flawed. But if that person is holding themselves accountable, has repented, has asked forgiveness, is trying to better themselves, and is trying to do what God has asked them to do, then we can't throw stones ourselves, and we have to really give consideration to that person and actually, to be honest, pay more attention to the word, and if the word that person is preaching is true, you know, versus condemning that person. I think we spend too much time trying to condemn people.
Yeah. I think there is some, a lot of time trying to, I think we easily find fault in everybody else but ourselves. I think we do. And if you are going to be a part of a ministry, I'm going to go back there, you have to understand that your service is to serve God. Sometimes we get caught up in serving the pastor of that church or the leader of that church or the minister or the priest of that church. And really we're there, if we're true Christians and Bible believers, we're there to serve God. Somehow, though, humans get in the way of that. And we then, well, he didn't come by and see me when I was in the hospital. And, you know, he wasn't at my brother's funeral, you know, but he was at the other lady's. You know, humans are in church, and we're all there for a reason, and to gather a new moral standard and understand what the Bible is trying to teach us and understand what God wants for our lives. Well, there's a lot more other stuff going on at church. You know, who had on the best mm-hmm. hat? Girl, did you see that dress? And why did he hug her like that? And I don't care what church you go to. I've been in every, you know, church as far as religion is concerned. And, you know, I like to visit other churches. You know, when John goes to speak somewhere, I'll go. But isn't it the same song? But if the leader is preaching one thing and living another thing, mm-hmm. I don't see how the ministry or the church can be blessed. I just don't see it, you know.
Yeah.
And somehow now, and I know we've got way off, church has become such a huge business. You don't even need any certification. You can start a church now and call yourself Bishop Longhead and have a thriving ministry if you can get some believers to come and serve your church and believe in what you're doing. You can start a church right here in a warehouse and call yourself Pippi Longstocking, Minister Pippi Longstocking. And that's where we are with churches. So even our churches don't mean the same thing in the Black community as they used to.
Mm-hmm.
The church was where you went to get all of your information and where you to mm-hmm. were, you know, and where leaders came to covet your vote and where you were given a standard on what businesses support, and you were given moral information, and you could find refuge in your church. That's not what it is now, is it, Gretchen?
Mm-mm. No, it's not.
And where do gay people go to serve? And I'm really being serious. Where do they go to serve? Where do they go to worship?
Mm-hmm.
You know, they need they're children of God too,
yeah.
But I find it a little bit above me, and I don't want to get too far off in this. I don't want to get any emails, and I do get emails from what I say on radio from other listeners. I find it a little bit above what I can stomach
mm-hmm.
to have the pastor and the first gentleman. That's a little bit for me. I don't think I could see. Yeah, you know. Two men who've gotten married, and they're it's a church in D.C., and it's the pastor and first gent. That's what they call him, the first gent. And it's a thriving church.
No.
So am I wrong for thinking, ooh.
No, you're not.
Should
you're
I
not.
Be
and
more
I
progressive for... for our demographics, for our listeners, that's beyond where I can believe and accept.
Well,
isn't that?
It's for me. It's kind of like, what do they say? Love the sinner, hate the sin. That's kind of
mm-hmm.
where I am. You know, mm-hmm. this is not against a person. This is not against the person. But the thing about it is, you make decisions in terms of how you're going to act, how you're going to love and respect God. And you know what the deal is. You know. I mean, so some stuff is just out of, that people are doing it is out of just disrespect, ignorance, not caring.
But then our intelligence kick in and say, is my sin if I lied to someone yesterday any less of a sin than homosexuality? I mean, we do accept some sins to go, okay, that's just a little small one. That's a whole nother conversation, isn't it?
that is another conversation. Sinning is sinning. But the thing about it is, to me, it's different when you sin and you make a mistake or whatever, you ask forgiveness and you make an earnest effort not to commit that sin or do that. But when you just openly and blatantly have decided that, you know, I'm just going to go ahead and sin and God's going to forgive me anyway, so I'm just going to go ahead and do what I do.
For repentance later.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of churches as I travel, you know, that have, you know, a first lady, you know, the pastor and first lady, and is two women. And I've seen it, you know, where the pastor and the first did. I've seen that a lot. The congregation is full.
And that is where I said that this is apparently an area where there has been no divine intervention. That was a man-made decision and not a God-made decision.
Sometimes it's a business decision. I think church can be a big business.
Well, this is where I think that there needs to be a balance in terms of business. I think that churches should have a pastor and a business manager, because I think that pastors get so caught up in the business of running the church sometimes that they don't get a chance to tend to the sheep.
And I don't know if they have enough time to hear from God to understand what God wants his ministry to be. So there should be, you know, the ministry. And then the finance piece of it.
Right.
I agree with you.
And that's why I said there should be a pastor. I think every church should have a pastor and a business manager so that the person that has been called by God can do the work that God wants him to do, that God fully intended him to do. And I don't think it's I think the pastor should have the final say. I think the business manager should be running stuff and everything, and I think they should have a competent and capable business manager. But that business manager needs to run everything by the pastor.
And that's
my feeling.
And I agree that the final say should be, we've gone way over. We've gone way over. We're so out in left field. And we have 13 minutes to go. We have not taken a break. We're not going to, listeners. You know, we're going to continue on. And we could do this religious thing all day, because that is.
Yeah,
so let, let's get off of that.
We're about it.
But diversity, you know, we have both agreed that in 2019, okay, we need it, but it's a shame that we do, you know. But then we just proved, too, that maybe I need some diversity training on homosexuality. Maybe I need to attend a class because I don't want to abandon what I know to be in the Bible.
Right. I totally agree with you. And that's the thing, is that there are people that feel that way, people in power positions that feel that way, that aren't speaking out. And we need them to. Because, like I said, it's not a matter of being against the person, but it's a matter of someone saying, this isn't right. I don't care how you want to box it or present it or gift it or whatever. This behavior is not of God.
Okay. Let me start right there. As a pastor, one of your things is to increase your ministry. Also, once you increase your ministry, you have to serve them with different programs and different avenues to help them, because that's what church is about, aiding your soul as well as trying to help you in trying times. So we have two members here. We have Sister Cooper. Sister Cooper is 75 years old, and she's been tithing $5 every Sunday. And during Christmas, she raises that to $10 during the month of December. And then we have Brother Brown. Brother Brown has a lifestyle that we may not agree with, but every Sunday he's tithing $1,000. And twice a year he gives the church $50,000. Which member do you think the pastor is going to choose?
Okay.
Because church has become a business. And those who have called may not have been called by God, but been called by money. But in normal times, which one do you think, if he had a choice to say, we have to eliminate a few members, you know, for whatever reason, the church has become small, or, you know, both of these members, maybe they're not living up to the church covenant, and we all live upon it within a church covenant. So, but we must eliminate one. Where do you think's going?
Well, this is the thing. One of the things that we have to remember, and it's unfortunate because we're thinking everybody that does the right thing is going to heaven. That's not the case. That's not the case. And we don't want to hear it, and it's hard to swallow. There's a lot of stuff that God tells us that's really hard to swallow. Moses, I'm sure, wasn't really happy when he was told he ain't going there after all the work he did to get God's people to where they needed to be. Okay? Many a call, few are chosen. Okay? So our leaders have to remember that the main thing they have to do is do the work that God instructed them to do. Now, whoever God picks, because it's God that's got to pick, okay? And if you're kind of the person, the messenger, or the person that God has sent to do it, you got to listen to God when you're making your decision. You can't go totally off of your own intellect and decision making. It has to be within what the boundaries that God has put down there. Okay, so if you think it's more, what should I say? How should I say this? Let's say in the best interest of the church that you pick one person, and God is telling you to pick somebody else, because we know throughout the course of the history and Bible that God has picked some really questionable people to do his work.
That's right.
You've got to go with what he says is the best
thing
for you.
So if God has done that, isn't it okay for a pastor to maybe pick some questionable people to help lead, to help provide? And even though I may disagree with your personal life, you are coming to serve God, and you tithe. You're my number one tither. And with the programs that I am trying to, to develop and bring to fruition, as a member, I'm going to pay you more attention and invite you to my Christmas party and all of that before I invite Sister Cooper. Am I not?
Okay,
from a human side.
Let me ask this. Does Sister Cooper give her last penny?
Sister Cooper gives more than 10% of what she makes. You know, and that's what he said. God said, if you bring in $100 a week, we only want 10% of that.
But didn't he also say, too, that he asked the question about people bringing money in and this person brought their last penny? Who do you think gave more? You not remember that?
Yeah, okay. I do remember that. But I'm
saying,
isn't there value in Brother Brown? There's value in him. And we are willing as people to overlook his sin because of his value, you know. And again, we prioritize these sins. We give them numbers. We assign them. Oh, that ain't so bad. Oh my. Oh no, they didn't do that, did they? Oh my God. Don't we do that?
Okay. Now this is the
thing. You're laughing at me.
No, I understand exactly what you're saying. But this is the thing. If the pastor's going to make a hard decision, can't you say, mm-hmm. I'm going to make a hard decision and I'm going to accept both people?
Mm. Okay. That's a hard decision.
That's a hard decision. Yeah,
I remember my pastor at First Baptist of Mandarin, Pastor Gary L. Williams, where the word is changing lives. He's still there at First Baptist of Mandarin in Jacksonville, Florida. That's how I really discovered God for myself in my late 20s, early 30s. But I remember him saying, we have an awesome, he leads the choir, music director. When I was his own choir director, music director, and he was excellent. He said, we still know, I want him to know that God is not pleased with his life of being a gay person. I want everybody here to understand in the Bible, now he's a leader of mine, but he has a lot of things to reckon with, and he did this from the pulpit. Should he have done that from the pulpit? I'll never forget that. He gave him some accolades, but he said he was concerned about the life he was leading. Everybody in the church knew he was gay, and he eventually left and went. He got a really some type of director of costumes at Universal Studios. So he moved from Jacksonville to Orlando, and we eventually got another one. But now pastor was standing on the word, but he was saying that, you know, he wasn't pleased with that part of his life, and he hopes that God convicts his heart to turn it around.
Mm-hmm.
And the church was completely quiet. I think the church was 1,000, maybe 2,000 members at that time. I thought 1,000 members was a lot at that time. I thought it was hard to get to know everybody. But, you know, we spent this hour here, especially this last 30 minutes, talking about our moral choices and how those moral choices bring you to God. And then can you worship among those moral choices and still live your own lifestyle? We complain that our pastors do it. All of them are not called. And 90% of them, oh boy, 90% of them, every time I'm taken aback, you know?
Yeah.
So, and I guess we started all this with diversity. And then we went into the moral compass. And then we went and you said a lot of this has to do with church, and there is no consistency in church. And I agree with you. But man, when you get to church, whew, even if you everybody needs to go to church on Sunday. When you get there, some of those leaders you don't need to hear.
No, and then the other thing too, not just going in the church. I need those church leaders to come out from behind the pulpit and go into the community and talk with the government leaders. And go on, you know, and say that this particular law is wrong, or it needs tweaking or something. But I need them to be more vocal. I mean, one thing we tapped on diversity a little bit. We haven't even talked about immigration, and that's a whole and how our country has just really evolved and changed. With regards to immigration and how people feel about it, that's a whole other can of worms. There are so many different things that we could discuss, but I want to see some religious leaders come out with, you know, and use their faith and practice their faith and say, no, God would not be about this. This ain't right. You know, and we are so, oh God, we got to go. But we're so accepting of all these other faiths that are coming out that Christianity is kind of like almost taboo right now, and I really hate that. Mm-hmm. But anyway, Princess,
no, our religious leaders are not taking a stand yet. We spent the whole hour. I told you, but I didn't have 11 o'clock to give you today. But have a great day, Gretchen. It's always good to be on
you
with you.
You do the same. Yes, you do the same. Appreciate it. Y'all hang out with us. On Friday, we're going to have Pastor Hugh Harmon on with us, so don't forget that. But we'll talk to you tomorrow. Have a blessed day, everybody. This is G's Power Hour on Never Had So Good Entertainment. And remember, all real power comes from God. Amen.